CliffCentral.com.
We are back, CliffCentral.com, on a Tuesday morning. We're joined this morning by Candice Mummer, who is our special guest host, and it's always good to see Candice. You will remember Candice had her own show on CliffCentral.com not so long ago. It's where many people will have remembered her from. You missing that at all? Are you? What are you actually up to at the moment? Give us a little update on your life right now. What have you been doing during lockdown?
I absolutely miss Cliff Central. Like, I mean, I always say it when people are like, you know, how did you get started? I'm like, Gareth Cliff actually took a chance on me when I would come into studio and be like, so I'd like my own show. And so I miss it so much. I'd come into studio like a tornado.
There were two people who I always loved seeing on a weekly basis. And Sia knows exactly who I'm going to say now, because these two people would come in with smiles and hugs and happiness and overflowing with just optimism and positivity every single time I saw them. The one, what happened, Sia?
I just hit my whole situation here. Ow.
So
between my glass of water, my laptop, the mic, everything started moving.
The first person was you, Candice, because you are that kind of, you know, you just got that energy. And the other one is Hlubi Mboya, who Hlubi used to come in and she would just like bear hug everybody. It took about 5 minutes for her hellos to be completed before she could even start doing anything. So
walk into meetings as well.
Hello. How's it guys? Yeah. Are you good? You are good. Okay. Yeah. Love you.
So great. It's actually so contagious. The both of you. It's your energy is palpable. And even if you're sort of feeling down in the dumps and you feel like I'm not a touchy-feely person, you bring it out of people. It's a good.
Oh, no, I love you guys. And I think people downplay like what Cliff Central did for so many of us. I mean, there were so many shows of newcomers and you took a chance on all of us, Gareth. But I think the most important thing was it was a family. Like I felt like you guys were my family. Every time I'd come into studio, I'd be like, I'm going to go see the fam. And it was just such a good vibe. So I completely miss it. That is the answer to the question.
Are you doing anything like that right now?
So I've got a podcast and a YouTube series running. And I saw you actually had a guest I'd had on my podcast, Evie Pompouris, on the show on E. I love her. How amazing is she? So I hunt down people that I find really cool and inspiring around the world. And I speak to them on my podcast, Coffee with Candice. Speak to my friend Elissa as well. So yeah, you guys, like honestly, Cliff Central is where I got my confidence. Like I was like, hey, I think I might be okay at this.
Well, that's good. That sounds great. So if you want to check out the podcast that Candice is doing now, you'll be able to find that. We'll put all the links up on cliffcentral.com as well. And you'll be able to go and partake. A quick thing here. This is an email we got from Wes. Wes wants to know, Wes was listening the other day and heard us talking about podcasts that we listen to. And Damon asked a question. Any suggestions? Wes says he's really into philosophy, history, skills development. Any audiobook suggestions? And maybe we could even do a weekly update on this. I'm trying to get through this 100 books to read before you die list, but Pride and Prejudice is boring as hell, says Wes. So I've actually got a couple of ideas here for you. So audiobook, I've said this a couple of times, so I may be repeating myself here, but the finest audiobook I've listened to in 3 years is probably Stephen Fry's Mythos, where he talks about Greek mythology. And even if you're not a fan of, or you don't have any understanding of Greek mythology at all, you'll pick up stories in Greek mythology that are just such a part of human storytelling that it's just beautiful to listen to. And especially because Stephen Fry is such a great storyteller. He's got that lovely voice, you know, he's got that amazing way, he's got the dramatic theatrical background that just, he tells stories better than almost anyone else. I could listen to him all day. So Mythos by Stephen Fry is a great audiobook to buy if you haven't got it already, and that'll keep you busy for a couple of weeks. A book, I would say the best book I've picked up in a while, and I've only just started it, but it's already looking like it has the most potential, is something called Dominion by Tom Holland. And it's really, this is more for history fans than anything else. And since Wes mentioned history in his list of interests, I thought I'd throw this.
And this
one
is
in
not
there.
Tom Holland, the actor, right?
No.
Who plays Spider-Man?
No. Okay. This is the author.
Multi-talented. Yeah.
No, this is the
bosses. He's like 18, 19, or 20 years old. Very fascinating.
Yeah, if you want a book, this is probably. Have you guys read any good books lately? You want to maybe suggest one to Wes?
I could suggest the podcast. I don't know how the viewers are going to judge me based on this one, but The Real Dictators, it tackles history, but it looks at it through the lens of dictators.
Okay.
It's actually so brilliantly done. There are all these people, historians, that come on and they speak about like Mao Zedong, Stalin, and how they rose to power, and they look at the country's context too. So I absolutely love that podcast. It was so good. Oh, it's so good. I'm obsessed.
I'm writing it down as we speak. That sounds like an awesome one. And then since we're talking podcasts, I found a very cool one. And this is interesting, again, if you are into history and architecture, and they overlap in this podcast. There's a podcast that's just been released. They've done three episodes. Someone called Emma Rutland. Sia, you'd like this. She's actually the Duchess of Rutland. And she's the 11th Duchess, Duchess of Rutland, and she's a lovely woman. She was born in Wales, and she married this English aristocrat, and she lives in a place called Beaver Castle, which is spelled Belvoir. Yeah, it's not what you think. And Beaver Castle is one of the most beautiful buildings in the world. It's like this fairy tale castle. And she's put together a podcast where she goes around England and Scotland and maybe even Ireland and Wales. I'm not sure. She's only done four episodes. And she asks the women who run these castles what it's like, what makes their historic home special. And it's really a cool, interesting podcast if you're into that stuff. So check that out. It's called, what is it called again? Duchess. Duchess, and that's quite a fun one if you're interested in something different to what Candace and I have suggested this morning.
Okay.
Yeah,
I like that being at home allows for a show and tell situation, but I just got into this book and I'm like, I would recommend it for anyone. I think like I spoke about it briefly a few months ago, but it's only now that I got my hands on and started reading it. It's by a gentleman by the name of Anthony Ray Hinton, and he was wrongfully imprisoned. You see, I don't know, maybe sometimes my recommendations are a little dour and sad, but he spent almost 30 years on death row.
Ugh.
And he writes about how he had to just focus and how he kept on going. And you can't even get into a book like this and then wake up on Monday and go, oh, well, what a crappy life that I have, because you aren't on death row, you aren't in. Yeah. So it's called The Sun Does Shine, because these are the first words he said as he was released. He hadn't seen the sun.
Oh my God.
For 30 years. And he walked out, saw the sun, and was like, the sun does shine. I'm like, okay, Mr. Hinton, if you can have a good life, then so can I.
Then what do we have to complain about, right? Yeah, you read a story.
Pardon?
See, I can't read stories like that because I hate these wrongfully accused situations. It just, obviously, I can't even watch movies like that. It drives me crazy. Remember, what was that one, the movie where the guy gets put to death and he did nothing wrong?
Ooh.
I can't even remember. It traumatized me so much that I avoid those kinds of shows now. If people end up in jail for like 20 years for no good reason, and then they find new evidence and they get released. I'm not like, oh yay, they got released, they found new evidence. I'm always like, give them those years back. How dare you?
Yeah, exactly. I'm on the same wavelength. And I remember on America's Got Talent, one of those shows, a guy came on and he was going to sing. And he spoke about his backstory. And I was just like hysterically crying like a crazy person. And basically, his story was he was wrongfully convicted and he finally got out. Man. And the one show that had him going was America's Got Talent. And he sang this beautiful song. And I was just like, oh, my heart. You know, my heart. And like you said, Gareth, for me, it's like, I'm always like, give him his years back. Yeah. You know, no amount of money can buy back those years. Oh, you know, even God. If the government does end up paying you like $1 million, $10 million.
Yeah.
You know, 20 years, you can't buy that.
Well, Ruth just reminded me the movie's called The Green Mile. And thanks, Wes, for that email, because I didn't know that we would turn this into like a podcast about what we want you, what other podcasts we want you to listen to or what other books we want you to read. But there we go. Now you've got a whole lot of homework for today. Sia, I want an update from you because I saw another clip of Prince Harry talking to Oprah in which he basically sold his dad down the river. So the clip that I saw, Harry's busy talking about how difficult it was for his mother and how he didn't want Meghan to have the same kind of life, so he needed to help her escape. That was more or less the gist of it, right?
Yeah, he says something along the lines of, with the dramatic piano, because, you know, you always need that.
Yeah.
There's pauses in between, and he says, it's actually a wonder, as he grabs Meghan's hand, that I'm sitting here talking to you because we made it out. Because,
you know,
then you start thinking, what are you actually going to say? And what is then his direct encounter?
Gosh, well, I don't know how I feel about these two. I mean, I do get it. Like, I get the fact that, firstly, Meghan, I feel like, you know, has been painted as this big bad villain who came and swept this prince out of his kingdom and, like, you know, made him abscond his family. But I think, obviously, with the crown, we're getting an inside look to some degree about the royal family, how hard it is, how, you know, and his mother, obviously. But I don't know, like, there is a element of Prince Harry and Meghan that I feel like is a little manipulative. Oh, like, I feel like the way they communicate and the baby, you know, the baby sharing, I don't want anyone to know about my little Archie, but here he is. And let's have an Archibald Foundation and let me give Oprah, let Oprah give me like $100 million to share my story.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you've got all these terrible things to say about the monarchy and your family, when you actually looked like you were living your best life. And I'm not saying that people can't have a terrible behind the scenes life, and families are complicated for all three of us, let alone the whole world, right? But I don't know. There's a very theatrical element to them that I can't get behind. And I just think that they're being a little vindictive with, you know, the way they phrasing how the queen is. And so
I'm with Candace, and Sia knows this. I've been pretty much on this side of the argument for the longest time. But here's this Harry, right? This ungrateful little shit who really owes his, the whole reason he matters to any of us is because he was born to Prince Charles, not Princess Diana, you know, God bless her, she's not here anymore, but Prince Charles. The reason we know he exists is because of his father and who his father is and who his father will become the King of England. Okay, so he basically says in this interview that they got out, he's managed to save his wife Meghan, not like his father who didn't save his mother, and sells his dad down the river. Now, you know, Prince Charles may be a lot of things, but he's not some attention-seeking publicity whore like Harry and Meghan are. And the best of them all, I'm going to say this until I'm blue in the face, people don't like to hear it, the real fairy tale is Prince Charles and Camilla. That is true love. They managed to, they fell in love years ago, and they stayed in love, and he cheated on Diana. Yes, that's wrong. But true love won the game, because after she died, they managed to get back together and they managed to get married and they managed to make everybody okay with it, which is a real fairy tale. And Camilla doesn't look like Diana looked. So I know a lot of people will look at this picture and go, but the fairy tale princess is meant to be gorgeous and beautiful, and Diana was, and Camilla looks like a horse and all that stuff. But the fact is, I don't think Camilla's horrible. I think she's actually the best of all of them. When did you ever see Camilla asking for attention? When did you ever see her selling an interview to anybody? When did you ever see her going on the cover of a magazine in some glamorous outfit? Even if she was that kind of person, and she isn't, thank God, what she's doing is supporting the monarchy. She's supporting her new family that she's married into. And she, to me, is the model princess. Forget about glamour and looking good in Vogue magazine and dancing with John Travolta, all of that stuff. God bless Princess Diana. She's not here anymore. But Camilla, to me is what she's a good person. That's a good person who's trying to do the best she can, and it's never about her. So, you know what, Harry? Oh. Look to your stepmother if you want some guidance on how to live your life. Stop trying to look at your miserable wife and your attention-seeking mom and yourself.
Let's also see the bigger picture in all of this, and that's how we can see the Harry and Meghan game plan. They could have done this interview last year. They could have done this interview late 2019. But no, they've strategically done it now. Why? Because the world is opening up again.
Mm-hmm.
And they're gearing up for talks. They're gearing up to travel again. They're gearing up to open abuse shelters that they have funded. They are gearing up to release Candace a book so that they can go on a world tour.
You know what?
That's part of the game.
Candace is right. It's very manipulative.
It is. But also, Sia, to interrupt you. I think it's more the case for me. Like, it is. It's very strategic because they tried it during COVID, but they realized there were bigger issues. No one cares. Okay, fine. You escaped a monarchy. Well done. And so when they realized that, no one actually cares right now because people are actually dying around the world and people are losing their jobs and their bigger issues, they had to kind of turn it back. But the thing is, if you've noticed, Meghan only gives talks where they're going to give a huge public standing. She only speaks about Black Lives Matter when all of a sudden she's Black, when all of a time in Hollywood she's identified as a white actress, and now she knows the struggles of being a Black woman. I mean, give me a fucking break.
Exactly. Nobody even knew she was Black on Suits, right?
Gareth brings it out in me.
But you're right. I mean, like, we had to wait until we met her mother to even know that she was Black, because frankly, I think a lot of people didn't realize any of that stuff when they watched Suits and didn't care, frankly.
And the only PR family member that could make it to the wedding, because having your Black mother there is better than having your white father who supported your acting, who you were on set with, who supported your whole lifestyle.
Right.
And now it's inconvenient because you want to identify as the first black woman in the monarchy.
Now
it's convenient.
I still reckon she's going to try and run for president in the United States one day, because she's a princess, because she's got the best of both worlds, because she's been an actress. You know, I wouldn't put it past her to have a political career in her future. Maybe not president, but senator or something like that. You could see she's into that stuff.
I think that would kind of be a step below her if she continues. I'm really being objective here. I will call it for what it is. Yes, I think Oprah is everything, but there's a certain holy trinity that she is now itching to be part of. She's befriended Oprah. As soon as she befriends someone like the Obamas or the Clintons, almost getting their endorsement, you're now in a certain group that will make people never, ever, ever want to call you out on something. Or as soon as you're called out, then the mob will say you're being a hater. But believe you me, she has at least 3 books in her. They have at least another Netflix deal that will be worth hundreds of millions. And yeah, Archie is going to go on and serve in the Congo when he's a
poor guy. Yeah, he's going to be forced to like attend all kinds of terrible things just because it's going to be good for the parents' PR. Well, for those people who don't care, I've said this before, for those people who don't care about that stuff, at least you know now what's going on. You've got like Sia's expert opinion on the royals, because he does know more than any of the rest of us. So, Candace, what kind of stuff are you doing to keep sane during lockdown? Because it has been going on forever. We're back to level one now, which I'm told is better, although I don't know how it's going to change my life. What are you doing to keep sane?
Oh, gosh. I think for me, and this is not the most popular opinion, but I'm actually loving. I'm loving the fact that I don't have to say yes to social functions. I don't have to feel obligated to be anywhere. I can listen to my podcasts in peace, work out, you know, read, do stuff that actually enriches me.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been doing a lot of that. I've been working out. I've been reading a lot. I've been writing a lot. And so that's been my focus. And that's actually, I don't know, I feel like it's been really good for me. 2020, 2021, just on an introspective, very selfish level, it's been so good, so good. And yourself, Gareth and Sia?
I feel like some days I'm really happy it happened because of all the things you've just said. but also because I feel like the pace of our lives was getting kind of ridiculous. I mean, in 2019, I was busy every single day, weekends, weekdays. I did a huge amount of traveling in 2019. I was in meetings from like 9 a.m. until 6 o'clock at night on some days, and it just became too much. You know, when you're on the highway and your heart's beating faster than it should because there's traffic and you need to be somewhere, and then when you get home, you are rushing to reply to emails even though you've just got home and you haven't even changed, you haven't even had a bite to eat. You know, those feelings don't subside when you get into bed at night and your stomach's in knots because you've got things to do and people to see and places to go, and there's so much on your mind. And I know it sounds silly, but I'm really glad that the pace of my life has slowed down. I jokingly said to Sia a couple of weeks ago on the show, I suppose I know what retirement feels like for very old people. Because this year has felt almost, well, 2020 anyway, felt almost like a forced retirement for all of us. We've had to figure out what waking up whatever time you want to is like, at least many of us, not all of us. We've had to feel what it's like to not have 20 things in a row that you have to do that day. We felt what it's like to have time to cook a meal or have a conversation or spend time with family. And those things, as irritating as they are because they might not have been our first choice in the 2019 world, I think they've done us some good.
And then on the flip side, even if you do have 20 things to do in a day, I think you're now more appreciative of it because you see people losing things and, companies are closing and, people have to downgrade their lives and lifestyles, and now whatever you have, I think you're a bit more grateful for it. Who would have thought that this is what we needed to teach us all of these things?
But I'm sort of ready now to start doing some, in inverted commas, normal stuff again. Like I'm ready to start seeing people in small crowds, not huge crowds, but I'm ready to like go out to restaurants and do that kind of thing again. I think that's fun. Missed out on
that. No, and I think you know what it is. I think we're going to approach it from a different, at least for me, I think I'm going to approach it from a different standpoint, whereby I used to be someone who felt so like I would rather die than disappoint someone. So I was always socially busy and socially engaged. and then I'd get home and just completely collapse because I spend no energy on myself and just giving it to everyone. And now it's like, who is important? Like, am I adding to them? Are they adding to me? Where do I want to invest my time, my energy? Is this car important? Is this apartment important? Is this dress important? You know, there's so many things now that you get to sit back and question that you didn't have to before. And I think if we can approach this, going phasing back into reality or, socializing, if we look at it from a different standpoint, I think it could be very beneficial for us.
Hey, I'm not missing those like events that I used to be invited to that I had to keep coming up with excuses for not going. Now I'm like, well, COVID, I'm terrified of COVID. I just turn into if someone who sends those invitations to me, and they haven't been a fortune of them because I think most of them have been canceled. But the people who do send those invites to me now must think I'm the most paranoid, frightened person in the world. You're like, I can't take COVID. It's terrible.
It's a pandemic.
So dangerous. I can't do this. Meanwhile, what I'm doing is like, Jesus, anything to not have to go.
Jeez, but Candace, you moved in the middle of all of this.
I did. And I think it was, it was one of those, I explained to you, Sia, it wasn't a big thing for me. It wasn't like, oh my gosh, like what am I? It was more like I felt like I was stagnant. I felt claustrophobic in my own life. Mm-hmm. And I think COVID having stripped back so much of my life, I was like, what is important to me? What are my core values? What do I want? And, to me, it was like, just move to Cape Town, like book a one-way ticket. And I did. I booked that one-way ticket. I came to Cape Town and it's one of the best decisions I've made. So I'm happy, really happy.
I think that's very brave to do during a year like last year, but well done. I mean, listen, a change is as good as a holiday. And are you pleased you made the decision now that you've been there a few months?
Oh, man, I love it. Like, I feel like such a regular Karen. Like, I've never felt so, like, entitled. I'm like, excuse me, I asked for milk. I asked for almond milk. Almond.
Oh, yeah. That's very Cape Town.
Squeeze it out of that almond, okay?
Yeah, that's very Cape Town. Poor Candace.
Oh, I feel privileged.
Listen, everybody, enjoy Candace while she still has a personality, because Cape Town's going to suck it out of her. She's going to be the worst Karen in the world soon.
Oh, you have no idea. Prepare, world, prepare. It was no mistake. I made the Dictators podcast the recommendation.
Well, you referred to something which I think is on a lot of our minds at the moment. There are lots of people who are looking for purpose and meaning and just something to do, especially if you've just finished matric. You know, we were talking earlier about how so many young people have matriculated and now they're going to be trying to find a career for themselves. And I thought it would be fun to talk to someone who works with a partner of ours. They've been with us at Cliff Central from day one, and that is Nando's. I want to speak to Pascal, who is the head of food at Nando's. Pascal Sobiecki. How are you, Pascal? Nice to see you, by the way.
Good morning. I'm well, thanks.
Good. It's great to talk to you. Now, listen, one of the reasons that so many people are stuck in their lives is because they tend to think, well, these are the only career paths available to me. And a business like Nando's has so many moving parts. I mean, you guys are an international super business, and you make the most amazing food, which people all over the world love. But you also have various departments that do so many interesting things. I mean, you're head of food. What does that mean?
So it means I have the best job, right? Tell Doug.
Yeah, tell me what you do on a daily basis.
So it's so varied, which is why I love my job so much. It can vary from, like, depending on the time of the year, if it can be quite strategic, like planning what we're going to do for the next year or 2 years with regards to innovation or food. Mm-hmm. And it can, we are wearing gumboots and I'm in a factory running a first production trial with one of our many suppliers. So you can imagine that's quite interesting because, right, there's ice cream and desserts and chicken and bread and salads. And so you get to go to all these factories, and I think factories are so fascinating.
Absolutely.
You sit a lot in meetings, I must say. The Zoom is killing me, as it kills all of us. But you sit in meetings from back to back because there's so many cross-functional departments to make anything happen. So you really have to work with all the different teams in the business. So there's a lot of meetings. You could be in a suit presenting to Jeff the one day, and the next day you could be cooking in a kitchen. So it's everything from creating the ideas, understanding the consumer needs and trends, all the way through to launching a product.
You can't possibly be head of food and enjoy the fact that you're not experiencing these things in person. So, I mean, it's very difficult during a year like all of us have had to hold down your job and to keep it stimulating for yourself and for everybody who works with you. But this thing about the factory, I mean, we all think of Nando's as being like these almost family-owned stores where you go in and you know you're going to get great chicken and whatever else you want because your menu is so extensive. But what goes into, you talk about strategy, what goes into planning that stuff? How does it work behind the scenes? Can you tell us stuff, or are you not allowed to?
I could tell you that kind of stuff. It's quite generic. So basically, when it comes to strategy, I always think you have to start off with your landscape, right? So what's happening out there in the world, what's happening in our country, because what happens is these macro trends, they influence consumer behavior, which influences food trends, which influence what we should be doing. So I can really start hunting just to understand and learn as much as I can. And then once we understand food trends that are relevant and we think are applicable to Nando's, then I can create, we call it ideation, can create ideas that link into that and deliver those consumer needs and also business needs, of course. And some of the things, like you say, some of the suppliers I then need to go to, some of them are baby mom and pop stuff. We've developed suppliers that used to work at flea markets and never supply and help them grow, which we're super proud of. And you know how proud we are of our chili farmers and all those good things. Yeah. And then sometimes really big suppliers, like some of our chicken suppliers are massive suppliers that you work with. So it's quite interesting because it's just all over the show.
Well, I went to that chili farm that you guys have in Mozambique, and it's easily one of the most fun things I've done. And I came home with a little handful of those chilies, which I still have some, and I still put them on some of my food. But you've just said something that got me thinking. Food trends. What are the world's food trends, and how have those changed over the last year and a half with this pandemic and, you know, the fact that maybe supply chains have been disrupted and people have had to think more at home than they used to, and maybe even cook more than they used to, because restaurants and
so, right,
and so on weren't open.
They're cooking a lot more, hey?
Yeah.
So we really have seen a surge of, you know, the upload of recipes and people, like if you just ask the likes of Woolies, all their stuff that like disappears off the shelf that never used to. And I'd say one of the biggest changes in food trends, people always used to say, they used to claim that they would eat healthy food.
Yeah.
But that wouldn't really convert, right? So they would still be as indulgent as ever. But now we're actually seeing conversion where people really are caring about their health and their family's health. So there's definitely doing more than just saying. There is experimentation with things like plant protein where people care about the planet more. Like they're looking and they're seeing the impacts of COVID and they're caring more. Like, you know, you see all this packaging that you get when you do one shop. Have you seen how much packaging you put in your bin? So people, I think, are just really are becoming more aware and wanting to make a difference to their health. Vitamin sales, we've spoken to people in the pharmaceutical industry that truly have skyrocketed. Like, people are buying and using vitamins now and minerals, you know, like, so I think naturality, which is one of the trends, is definitely hot. Things like sustainability, plant protein, definitely growing. South Africa's niche, of course, because, you know, when you have an economy like ours, it's not the same as the UK. So our people just need to eat, you know. So, also value. I mean, with the economy, it just brings to mind that one of the next most important things we're going to have to do is try and give good food to people at affordable prices, because people are going to like lose jobs. They're going to suffer. We need to be able to find ways to deliver that goodness to them.
I'm trying not to hog all the questions that I have for you here. Sia and Candace will have a go in a second. I want to know about jobs, because you just mentioned how much strain and difficulty there is on so many people in South Africa, and it's been an ongoing discussion on the show for the longest time. But what kinds of careers are available to people at Nando's? And do you guys have jobs available? Because there may be someone sitting there thinking, you know what? I love this brand. I love the kind of the stuff I know about it, which is out there in public. And I love the food. I love the ethos of Nando's. But how do I even begin to approach this thing? And what are the options? What are the career paths available?
So Nando's as a whole, what is fascinating is there's like I mentioned, that massive cross-functional team. So you get supply chain, because remember, there's quite a massive team that look after how do we get every supplier to produce in full on time to all these different depots. There's distribution. Like, people forget that like everything needs to be distributed. That's a whole science on its own. You know, there's operations. So how all the guys in the restaurants are led by ops teams, you know, there's training departments. I develop a recipe. How do they train it on videos and specific training techniques? Training cards is HR, of course, is quite strong with so many people in restaurants and within the Nando's team. There's a big finance team. You know, our marketing are just the best team out there. The marketing must be the best marketing place to work for.
Oh, for sure.
And then within marketing, there are all these different disciplines, right? There's what we call brand experience, consumer experience. There's strat, and there's, you know, all the sides with the amazing and above the line, below the line. There is in the field marketing, so in the restaurants, making sure that we position things in the right places, do the right things when we launch or open a restaurant. Then what else? There is Yeah, it's just so varied, Gareth. It's just honestly.
Well, I'm glad that there are jobs. I'm glad that there are gaps available and people can come in and try and figure this out. Candace and Sia, I know you've got lots of things to ask the head of food at Nando's, so go ahead.
And you, me and Sia started with a mutual.
You know, Pascal, I'm just going to read, look at this, a fax that came through. It's from a company called GCS Market Research. Gareth, Candace, Sia Market Research. Wow. So the head of this company, Sia Sangweni, would like to just make more of a statement and say, Pascal, I am ready and willing to test new ice cream flavors and any of your summery drink delights should you need to at no cost at all. So yeah, just had to read that fax this morning.
Perfect.
That's almost too generous. Pascal, I'm sure you are like chomping at the bit to hire him. I mean, it's almost so generous you can't refuse. No, but I want to know, like, what is your favorite part of the job? Because for me, I hear your job title and immediately I'm just like food, food, food. I'm just going to eat, eat, eat. Like, I don't even like all the technical. I'm like, ugh, whatever. What's your favorite part, Pascal?
I'd say like that creative. I love understanding the world of it. But I think when you're actually in the kitchen and you're creating and you put something together and then you have that aha moment of excitement, like this is gonna work. That is the best feeling. So that's probably the most fun because, to be honest, the actual cooking and I eat a lot, but the actual cooking is a small piece of that long chain, you know.
And then, by the way, how far in advance do you work? So, you mentioned trends. Do you work by seasons? Do you work by months? Are you already in like June and July? And what will
So brand plans, we try to do a 2-year brand plan. Can you believe it? Yep. But in essence, I can probably, if I really galvanize a team and there isn't massive equipment, I can do it in 6 months. But generally, it's about a year timeline.
Wow.
Wow.
That's a hell of a thing to be planning that far ahead. And there must be some items that we take for granted now on our menu that you are still really proud of because some of them must have been breakthrough things. You know, we think about how, for example, I didn't ever know Perry wedges before you guys started with them. Was that one of your inventions?
No, I can't claim that one, but Perry Tater was. Ah. So sometimes, you know, you get really stuck because you're not allowed to bring. So the challenges are like you're really limited with how many ingredients you can bring into the restaurant. So supply chain are like, no more SKUs, and ops are like, you have to make this in a minute and you can't bring anything new in. So I just took two products and mixed them together. So sometimes it can be as easy as that. And there's so many, you know, Gareth, like bougie bowls, just, I love bougie bowl. And the drinks, designer drinks weren't there when I got there. The salads have improved. If you had a grande salad lately, I mean, that's just like such a nice salad where you don't feel like you've lost out, you know. There's so many.
I love that. All right. Well, listen, I mean, if anybody's thinking about these career path options, you can actually, you can check it out. Nando's obviously one of the coolest brands in South Africa and someone, some gap there might be exactly the gap that fits you. And it's worth getting hold of them and talking to them. It's terrific to meet you, Pascal. And it's good to have you on the show this morning. Thanks for talking to us.
Such a pleasure. Have a great day, guys.
Amazing. Good stuff. Hey. It's left me hungry, unfortunately. Cheers. There's Pascal Sobiecki. She's from Nando's. She's the head of food. It's amazing. You could be head of food in a company like that. And, you know, we do think of Nando's as being this little family business because all of us go to our local Nando's and it maybe even runs like that. But it's a massive operation. I mean, you heard her saying, you know, when she comes up with an idea, supply chain, operations, marketing, they all get involved and they're like, you've got to do this, you've got to do that. And it must be very, very
How many
difficult.
Ingredients are in the kitchen, how long it will take. Sure. And, oh, Lord, there's a lot of thought put into that. But now I can't stop thinking about food now.
I know. I was just thinking, maybe it's for lunch. I should have Nando's.
breakfast. Would your ideal job be the ice cream taster? Seriously, you wouldn't get sick of that?
No. I would not get sick of that.
Okay.
It's the ice cream. It's anything with halloumi. Nando's does this roasted veggie and halloumi wrap.
Okay, Wendy Williams. Okay, look at you.
Then those crushed ice drinks and get in my belly.
Yeah, I think even back to the point that we started on this morning, even for someone like Pascal, there must be days where she's like, oh no, I don't want to do anything with food again. The food. Just like all of us complain about our jobs. I wonder if she ever does.
Oh, I think she also does.
I'm also thinking about the pressure, though. Have you ever had people over?
Oh, yeah.
And you're just catering for six people and you think, like this. Oh, no, is that too much? Okay, let's put the sauce on the side so that people don't feel like there's too much sauce.
Yes.
Now you're catering for
the nation, literally.
The world.
I've never felt that way because when people come to my house and there is food, I always go, look, if you're coming for the food, you're going to be disappointed. It's not my strength. You
know? I love that you just set expectations very early.
I set them low.
But you know what it is? Like when you said that about Pascal, Gareth, I used to work for Lindt. I used to be a promo girl. And I remember the Lindt balls, the like little things. And I swear now when someone actually gifts me Lindt, I'm just like, oh,
you
fuck.
Can't. Yeah, you
I'm
can't.
Just like, I put, really? It, I put it in my cupboard because I'm like, okay, who am I going to re-gift this to?
Yeah.
I like wait for someone to invite me to their house just so I can take it with me because I can't stand it. Like,
Did you have too many of them? Is that what put you off?
Of course I did.
Yeah.
I was like a greedy child in Charlie's Chocolate Factory. Like, I had boxes of the stuff and I just like eat it. Like, and I'd be like, I could, you know, the worst part is I was like, I could never get sick of this. Now I'm just like, I see it and I'm just like, no.
Well, I used to, as a kid, I remember my mother would tell us that she, her mother, my gran, used to grow strawberries. And they would go into the strawberry garden and they'd pick strawberries. And she said she now cannot see or touch or taste a strawberry without feeling sick. And I thought she was talking nonsense, but your story has corroborated that because, you know, who would say no to Lindt chocolate? If you got sick of that, then maybe it is true. So I'll go and apologize to my mom at some point later this month.
Right.
Apologize. It's so true. Strawberries. I can't stand it.
Who could have possibly, who could hate strawberries and Lindt chocolate? What are you people insane? Must be.
Yeah. Actually, I have personal examples with both of those. And no, I'm not sick of those at all. We used to, my grandfather and I used to make it a thing. There was a strawberry farm about like an hour and a half out of Durban growing up, and we'd drive there. And, you know, I think at farms they charge you by the punnet, so you just pay for the punnet itself and then you just go and you pick to your heart's content. I would eat so much while just picking that the punnet was the least of my worries. So right. Why are we talking about food again so much today?
It's very distracting. All right, let me go to an email here from Coco, but it's not Marcelo Coco, the guy who was being interrogated at the State Capture Commission yesterday. This is Coco who listens to us, and Coco says, while you mentioned yesterday how wonderful it is to have everything on one smartphone, because we were talking about all these devices that you would need to do the things that one smartphone does now, we have levels ahead in the Nordic countries. So wherever Coco is, it's somewhere in Norway, Sweden, Denmark, or Finland. Over 4 years, some private sector companies have been offering their employees an opportunity to have a microchip inserted in the back of their palm between the thumb and index finger. The chip is used to scan, work and home doors as a key, to log in at work as a personal banking login, tax login, medical accounts, social media accounts, pay on digital pay machines, and public transport. The list goes on. So this is happening. Remember people used to say you were going to get that microchip and we're all like terrified of being microchipped because that's the way that people are going to track you and they're going to control you. Mm. Seems like it's happening in some countries already. So Coco, I didn't know that, but thank you.
Yeah, geez. I mean, the biblical part of me is just like, it was predicted, it was seen.
Mark of the beast.
The mark of the beast is here. That's I'm just right. like, oh no, do not, keep my fingers intact and away from the chip. I'm not ready for judgment day. I haven't done all my penance yet.
Gotta start apologizing. But would you sign up for something like that, Candace?
Oh no. Like not, I'm not an early adopter at all. Like, especially like with a vaccine, I'm like, sign me up. But no, with a, like a microchip, because I also think like in South Africa, I think a little differently because I'm just kind of like, okay, now they're going to like drag me to the bank and be like, bring your palm, you know? And if I'm like fighting, now they take, no, I'm just like,
I'll cut your hand off.
Too many risks. No.
I'm worried about that. So. But it's not so much that. I think, you know, if you can carry something around and then put it away, lock it in a cupboard or lock it in a drawer or put it in your bag or leave it in your car, that to me is as good. And you don't have to have it on your actual hand. I don't want to be, you know, microchipped anytime soon. I'm sorry if it makes me sound like I'm paranoid, but no, thank you.
But also, like you've seen with cell phones, right? Like, I mean, some meetings won't let you even come in with your cell phone. They like put it outside. But I mean, they pick up on our audio all the time. Now, imagine a chip. Like, you know, they're going to be, and now now Facebook is releasing statements like, we have not tapped into your chip, you know, like just because, you know,
I don't believe these. I don't believe these big tech companies and they say that stuff. I'm sorry. It does make me sound like I'm paranoid, but nah, not for me. All right.
I think we should be rightfully paranoid.
Yeah, well, you can't trust them. We can't even trust them. They as Candace says, they're spying on us anyway through our phones. That's why you get these targeted ads that you didn't want for things that you didn't know you were talking about. It's driving me crazy half the time. You see these, you can't do anything without getting advertising from Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and all the rest of them. It's crazy. Nikki sent me an email and said, there are a million things to love about the show, but one thing that makes me laugh is the impersonations. I even find myself rewinding the funniest ones. Okay, this is interesting. Here are my top five. This is Nikki's top five impersonations on the show. Number one, well, I'll start at five. Let's go backwards from five. Leanne doing any male butch voice. You know when Leanne goes, hur, 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 she does the male voices. Number four, Leanne doing don't be suspicious. Number three is Gareth doing pretty much anything on the Loudhailer. Two is Sia doing Kamala Harris. So you've got to give us a Kamala Harris quickly, Sia.
Oh, we did it, Joe. You got to be the next president of the United States. Oh, you did it, Joe.
Oh, she's so annoying. that crazy laugh, yeah. That's great. And then the all-time favorite is me doing Joe Biden, but my Joe Biden's crap. I haven't even worked on that very hard. So I don't know.
No, it's good enough because he also just mumbles.
Yeah, I suppose you just talk nonsense. It's a real bonus when there's a show that includes two or more of the above, according to Nikki. Yeah, I've got to work on my Joe Biden. So thanks for the reminder. Try and get that going properly. Yes. All right.
Well, on that note, it isn't much of a surprise, though, to know this, but people are already betting. You know, they're professional bettors putting their money on things. They're already professional bettors who are putting their money at Kamala Harris becoming the president in 2024. Like, folks, we haven't even been through 2 seconds of a Biden administration.
I reckon
like,
she could be president.
I think she's going to be before.
Yeah, because Joe's going to die.
That's really? What people. I've heard, and while you know, sometimes like Joe Biden is a little sleepy. God bless his soul, but
just a little.
I mean, he comes a whole lot. Yeah, I just feel like I'm already firing so many bullet holes, and since Judgment Day is coming, I don't want to be you know at the front of the line. But people are just like. Like, look, like the reason they chose Joe is because they wouldn't have voted for Kamala up front.
Yeah, right.
So since Joe's term in life is coming to an end shortly, Kamala's just going to step in and then it's just going to be a smooth transition.
Yeah, let me give Candace a moment to clear something up. She's not wishing that Joe dies. She's looking.
Thank you, Gareth.
Right. She's looking at the evidence.
I mean, they're definitely going to cancel me.
She's seeing a very old man who is not entirely all there and, you know, he is the oldest president in history, so he's probably not looking at too much more time on planet Earth. And if that's the case,
his term in life.
Yeah, his term in life. And listen, you're right. You're right about another thing, Candace, is no one would have voted for Kamala. She didn't even get in through the primaries. You know, no one cares about her. She's annoying and we can see through her and she's kind of there for a bunch of politically convenient reasons. But the way for her to get to the Oval Office is by Joe hopping the perch. If I were him, I wouldn't be accepting free drinks from Kamala anytime soon.
No, Garrett.
Or but anything. Actually, I wouldn't stand by the steps with her. I wouldn't have, a letter opener around her. Exactly. But I wouldn't have any peanuts, anything.
No, having said all of this, don't you guys think, I actually think she's got the chops to be a president. I think she's got, you know, all the things that people don't like about her, the fact that she may have, like, she manipulated her way to power, whatever. Mm-hmm. I think those are the very things that could actually make a pretty good president. So I'm not mad at it. What do you guys think? Do you think she could be like a good president?
I don't know. I had this argument with a friend of mine the other day, and my friend says that she knows more about Kamala than I do, which is entirely possible. I haven't really studied the woman. The little bits that I do know are not very attractive propositions. Her politics doesn't strike me as being anything vaguely in concert with my own. But who knows? You know, sometimes someone who's unpopular for a bunch of kind of silly reasons ends up being quite a good leader because they're willing to be unpopular. So I'm not gonna judge. I haven't really paid much attention. I don't know a lot about her. I don't think she would be at my top list of people that I'd want to spend time with, but that's not always the good mark of someone who's in leadership. Sometimes you don't want a person who's likable. Sometimes you want someone who makes the unpopular decisions, which is why you got to keep an open mind to these things. Who knows?
But then back to President Biden, there is no way right now they are just allowing the leader of the free world, the man who has access to nuclear codes, to just stagger around the White House
they
and
are.
Wake up with aches and pains.
There was a day the other day, I can't remember if it was last week or the week before, where he basically took the whole day off to just nap and do like old man stuff.
I think most definitely there's probably someone who has now been employed to just give him arthritis cream or to pump him with vitamins. No, think about the circumstances just the ripple effect of having a sitting president die and just die of natural causes, and even just the look of the perceived power of the US.
There's a White House pudding person who's been assigned.
Oh my God.
There's someone who's mashing all of his food and blending it so that it's nice and soft. They are checking his teeth every day. They're giving calcium stuff for his bones. They can't afford to just have a president who, what? And then we have to have a funeral for the president and say, oh, he tripped over a rug and that's how he died.
Oh my God.
Sorry, I'm quiet.
No, I need to go. This is entertaining because we were all worried that once Trump left the White House, we'd have nothing to talk about. But we do. We have old people jokes. That's the best.
Oh my God.
Love it. Oh man. All right, Fatiswa says they used to have. She's talking about Nando's here, but Fatiswa says they used to have those joined thighs meal. At Nando's. The double thigh was it for me.
The double thigh.
Double thigh. I don't know if we're still talking about chicken, but okay. Take your word for it. All right.
It could go anywhere, very truth good. Be told.
Well, Candace, I mean, it's really good to see you again, and lots of compliments pouring in for you. Cabello says, I love the energy of Candace. Beautiful soul. Absolutely. It's one of the reasons we love having her around. And it's great to connect with you again after all these months I haven't seen you.
Oh, thank you. And you know I love you guys. You guys are like my natural home. You're like home base. Awesome. But actually the family I would have chosen, you know. I would have chosen.
Well, thank God for that.
Now go out there and hit the promenade and...
And go be my regular Karen.
Yeah, go and become,
I'm going to go put on my yoga pants now.
Yeah, go and become that Cape Town housefrau that you've always wanted to be.
I'm hunting, Gareth. You have no idea. I'm hunting away. I'm like, poo, poo.
Yeah, there we go.
I'm like, any Joe Bidens on the promenade today?
Oh, wow.
That's great. I love it. All right, very good.
Oh, my gosh.
Thank
terrible,
you. All right. Candace Mama, everybody, you can also catch her on her own podcast. And thanks for joining us this morning. Sia and I will see you tomorrow. bright and early at 6 o'clock. Have an excellent day in the company of cliffcentral.com. Be good, and if you're not, take photos. Ciao. Cliffcentral.com.